It's 8:19. This is Morning Edition on KASU Jonesboro. I'm Mark Smith. Joining me by phone this morning is Arkansas First District Representative Rick Crawford. Good morning.
Hey, how are you?
Doing well. First of all, first chance I've really had to have one of these conversations with you since the election, so congratulations on your reelection.
Appreciate that.
Now, we've got, of course, a situation going on right now known as the fiscal cliff, in which a set of automatic tax hikes and spending cuts will go into effect at the first of the year if the president and the two major parties in Congress can't reach some agreement on taxes and spending cuts before the end of the year. Of course, time's running out, and it's looking like this is not going to get resolved before Christmas.
Well, you know, that seems to be the general consensus, but I'm going to hold out hope that, you know, we're able to reach a deal. You know, we've got the speaker and the president behind closed doors, and hopefully they'll be able to come up with something that works for everybody.
Well, of course, both sides are accusing the other of not showing specifics and of saying, let's do my part of this now and we'll do your part later. And this is what leads to a lot of frustration for Americans. It's hard to know which side's telling the truth, and the conclusion that a lot of Americans come to is, maybe you're just all lying. We can't trust any of you.
Well, you know, I think both sides to some degree, look at, if the president says, give us what we want today and we'll work out your issues tomorrow, I don't think that's a good faith effort on his part. At the same time, the speaker has put revenues on the table, which is really the president's, main issue. And so, it's not about trying to fix blame. It's about trying to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I think both sides are working at that, but I just don't think that we can realistically say, yeah, okay, well, we'll go ahead and give you all these revenue increases, and then we'll talk later about what we get in exchange for that. And I don't think the American people are willing to settle for that.
Right. Now, is it some people are even saying it's better to have no deal and go over the cliff than to agree on what you feel is a bad deal. What do you feel about that?
Well, we're starting to hear that, from constituents and others that are sensing that, that frustration is building, and they're kind of at a point where they're saying, you know what, maybe it would be better just to go ahead and go over the cliff and deal with the issues after the fact. That's a tough position, but if we're not able to reach a deal, then that is a scenario that could play out.
Well, how devastating an impact will that have on us economically? People are saying that could put us into another deep recession.
Well, I think that's going to be determined by how the markets respond to that scenario. And right now, we don't really know. We do know that in advance of December 31st, there's going to be an awful lot of market activity. But what happens on January 1 remains to be seen based on a deal that we get or don't get. So, certainly the markets are going to have a lot to do with that and what the economic fallout could be or might not be, depending on what deal emerges.
Now, you talked about revenues being on the table. I guess the question is, what are we talking about as far as increased revenues? We've discussed tax reform before and eliminating loopholes, but most people agree that's really not going to do enough.
Well, there has to be spending cuts, and so it's not enough to put just revenues on the table and call that good. In fact, last week myself and Congressman Trent Franks from Arizona, we led an effort to try and make permanent spending controls part of the fiscal cliff deal. And I've been a pretty strong advocate of that for quite some time, as you know. And whether you want to call it a balanced budget amendment or a spending limitation amendment or whatever, there has to be some permanent spending control measure in place to make whatever deal emerge palatable. And, I think that a growing number of people feel the same way. Certainly the American people want to see spending under control. And if we don't do that in a structurally sound way and not a statutory way, then we don't know what the next Congress or the Congress after that is likely to do with respect to spending. But we do know that when we put taxes, if we increase taxes or put revenues on the table, that they tend to stay there, whereas spending cuts sometimes don't materialize. And, you think about the deal that President Reagan made years ago It was, increased taxes for spending cuts, and the spending cuts never materialized. And his successor, George Bush 41, had a similar scenario in his administration. And so I quite frankly don't believe that that's a good deal, you know, to say we're just going to strictly trade revenues for spending cuts and call it good. I think that there needs to be a structural reform in place to make sure that future Congresses don't continue to keep us on this path.
Is there a particular area, though, where we can pinpoint and say, here's where most of the spending cuts need to come?
Well, I think in the broadest sense, every agency, every department, every part of the government needs to examine what contribution they can make to spending cuts. You know, there are some programs that could be zeroed out because they're ineffective, and other programs that can't take really deep cuts, which is why I didn't favor an across-the-board approach, because what you're doing there is allowing some programs to escape relatively unharmed that are ineffective and wasting taxpayer dollars, and then you're taking programs that need all the help they can get and doing damage to them. So I think we need to take a very specific approach to what programs can and should be discontinued, whether they can, whether they could be zeroed out, consolidated, whatever, in an effort to try and curb spending, and then just look at going forward whether we've got sufficient cuts in mandatory spending, because we could take discretionary spending down to zero and we still wouldn't be able to address our spending problem effectively. So we've really got to stop kicking the can down the road. I hate to use that term, but it's one that we've been doing for years in Washington, and the problem's just not getting any better. So a permanent spending control forces that debate, and it forces us to do our jobs.
Well, the concern of many people, I think, there are certainly examples of people who work the system and get government benefits that they don't deserve, and that certainly needs to be found and weeded out. But there are also many people who are genuinely struggling and need some help. And I think that's a concern, that what happens to these people if spending cuts focus on these programs that are helping some people?
Well, and if you just walk in there and just start to arbitrarily cutting spending without looking at exactly how you're doing it, you touched on it exactly. Is the problem that we're hearing from folks back home, and is they're frustrated with folks that are taking advantage of the system, availing themselves of resources that are not supposed to go to them, but in fact supposed to go to people who really do need help. And I think that's our job, is to make sure that we're directing those resources to where they are supposed to go, to the people who genuinely need them, and not folks who may or may not be taking advantage of the system and causing more pressure on finite resources. And so that's our job, is to make sure that we are doing that. And I think certainly the folks in our district realize that. They get that and understand that we can't have this widespread exploitation of federal programs just because they're there. And we certainly want to direct the resources that are supposed to help people to the folks that genuinely need the help, and not to folks who would just be taking advantage.
Well, let's look at some other issues that are going on facing this Congress, and that will be facing the next Congress as well. We still don't have a farm bill. What's happening with that, and how are our farmers preparing for the coming year without that legislation in place?
Well, we're hopeful that, I still think there's a slight possibility that before the end of the year, a five-year extension, or five-year reauthorization, rather, that is the House version, could be passed out of the House. And it's essentially been pre-conferenced with the Senate, so the conferencing of the bills could go fairly quickly. I don't hold out a huge amount of hope for that, but there is a remote possibility. Failing that, I think what we're more likely to see is a one-year extension of the current law. And in the short term, I think farmers in our district are okay with that, even though that, as far as the direct payment is concerned, there will probably be 15% stripped out of that funding level for the direct payment. And they're okay with that. The downside, though, is that we've got to start over and mark up a new farm bill starting in January if that happens. And that means that the baseline is going to be skewed, and it's going to be effect. And, that is a concern. We already know that the direct payment was taken out of the House version, but it was replaced by price loss coverage. I think that would likely continue. Bottom line is we'll take a one-year extension if that's what we can get, but I would prefer the five-year, you know, full reauthorization using the House bill as the benchmark for that.
I know one thing that's been a concern for farm trade as well as transportation of other goods is the drought in the upper Midwest that's caused the Mississippi River to be at some record low water levels. This has seriously threatened barge traffic. I know we've gotten some good rains here recently, and that might help a little bit in the lower Mississippi, but how serious is the problem now?
Well, it is pretty serious. In fact, we were talking about that yesterday with some folks, the day before yesterday, actually, that they had those concerns. But, you know, you get north of Arkansas, and it's pretty dire.
Yeah.
We've been, you know, fortunate. In fact, looking at a story that University of Arkansas Cooperative Extension Service put out yesterday that shows that, you know, the rains that we've gotten have helped to continue to, you know, keep some of that barge traffic rolling down, as you said, on the lower Mississippi.
Right.
But that's not helping the situation north of us. And so there are some measures that could be taken with some reservoirs that they could drain some reservoirs into the Mississippi River north of us. But, you know, the law of unintended consequences, what happens then, you know, if we do that, and, you know, quite frankly, those reservoirs are a little bit low because of the fact that we've had a drought, and that could create problems that we can't really anticipate. So there's really, you know, a lot of talk about it, but not a whole lot of action in terms of here's what we're going to do. I think people are still kind of spitballing about what would be the best course of action.
And really the best thing that could happen is rain.
That's it. I mean, we can't force it to rain.
Right.
We'd love to, and you know, there's I mean, you can blame Congress for a whole lot of things, but you can't blame Congress for lack of rain. And although there are a whole lot of folks that have tried, it's just that's something that's beyond our control. So we're going to have to rely on the good Lord for that.
Our neighbors up north just need to pray for more rain.
Yeah, I think we all do. Yeah. We need to help them.
A couple of months ago, I know you held a meeting at one of our local schools to talk with school officials and parents about nutrition standards in our schools. I know the current administration and the First Lady's been very involved in this, setting out to try to get kids to eat healthier. And I think we can all agree this is a noble goal with good intentions, but it hasn't worked out as well as hoped.
Well, that's true. And, you know, we got out in front of this. We started hearing complaints from superintendents, teachers, parents, students the first week of classes in August, and it became such a problem that we decided to put together this school nutrition summit back in October, and that we heard from 10 school administrators and some parents that were on our witness panel, and you know, coaches and teachers were complaining that their students weren't full because they weren't getting enough calories and so on. But I'm happy that after our nutrition summit that Secretary Vilsack got the message and has decided to ease the federal regulations. And he has admitted that a one-size-fits-all approach for school lunches and calories and so on just doesn't work. And so, again, you said it was a noble effort and well-intended, but it probably wasn't well thought out in terms of how you implement it. And we heard from some folks, administrators and parents, that really had some great ideas about how we go about trying to improve the nutrition quality of our students. But this approach was fell short, and I think the Secretary recognized that. And I'm glad to see that they're listening, and I think that our event in October sort of underscored that, and glad it didn't fall on deaf ears.
Well, very quickly, do we just go back to what the schools were doing before? Is there a way to do this successfully?
Well, I think we have to learn from this and recognize that you know, one of our parents had a great perspective on this, is that you know, if we really want to introduce new dietary standards and new eating habits, that we have to start that early on. So a K through 2 type of an approach, so that they learn to grow up with a different type of school lunch program, and then that every year after that it goes K through 3, K through 4, K through 5, and it would take a few years to sort of walk into this new nutrition standard, but over a period of time you can introduce those kids to a different nutritional offerings there that I think are going to help out and do the most good over time. And the other thing is, there's simply a cost issue that the schools couldn't sustain. It was increasing their cost by some of the bigger schools, $40,000-$50,000 a year shortfall that they were having to make up out of general funds, and that's really a lot to ask for these school districts.
Well, we got less than a minute left. I wanted to give you just a few seconds to say whatever you want to our listeners as we move into the holiday season with Christmas approaching and the new year just around the corner.
Well, I certainly want to wish everyone a Merry Christmas and a prosperous New Year, but I want to really remind folks that there are a whole lot of people out there that are in harm's way, that are away from their families during the holidays, and that's, of course, our military, our men and women in uniform. And so I would just ask our folks at home to keep them in your prayers, and what they're doing, what they do day in and day out for us as members of the military is make it possible for us to enjoy the blessings of this season. And so we certainly want to make sure that we keep them in our thoughts and our prayers, lift up their families, and wish them the very best holiday they can under the circumstances.